reader Stephen Brickman. Yay. And our MP3. Stephen Brickman left medical school to pursue a career writing jokes as managing editor of National Lampoon. Is that a joke or is that true? Where's Steve? That's true. We like that. He has been thrown out of both the 2000 Democratic National Convention for pulling a Lampoon prank and the Smithsonian Museum, where some of his Lampoon work now resides. His work has appeared in Playboy.com, Cracked, Nerve, and in Awake, a reader for the sleepless. He has, on more than one occasion, performed stand-up comedy naked. Are you reading clothed or naked?
I'll be clothed.
Okay, clothed tonight. He has written for or appeared on a number of TV shows nobody has watched or remembered, so why name them? He was featured... I should do stand-up. He was featured in the Huffington Post for growing an impeachment beard?
That's true.
What does that mean?
I refused to shave until Bush was impeached.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It didn't work out.
And the New Yorker, he was featured in the New Yorker also for selling himself, wait a minute, there's more, on eBay. Really?
Also true.
How much did you get?
$400 for the entire writing staff.
For the entire writing staff?
Yeah, the whole writing staff sold.
I thought you were saying $400 for the entire night.
No.
The kind folks at Prairie Home Companion once sent him a $200 check in return for some jokes. As a writing fellow at the University of Massachusetts, his fiction was awarded the Harvey Suedos Prize. Sorry. He lives happily in Winchester with his inscrutable wife and two adorable children, one of each.
Thank you all for coming, and Tracy, thank you for managing to put together the only reading in Boston that people actually show up for. It's really incredible. I just want to start by saying I'm not really sure what's going on in the world, but there seems to be it seems to be the season for offensive outbursts. So. There's a point in the story where I mentioned the healthcare system, and if somebody could, or everybody could just shout out, "You lie!" It'd be great, and I'll give you like a signal so you know when to do that. All right, so this story is called "The Most Horrific 8 Hours of Anybody's Life Who Ever Existed on the Planet, Bar None, Except for Perhaps Maybe, But Only Maybe Now, Jesus." When I read in the Herald that Mass General was conducting an insomnia study, it sounded like an easy thing to pull off. Easier even than the generalized anxiety disorder trials I'd undergone last month, and twice as profitable. Better yet, this one wouldn't involve any drugs. All I had to do was let them wire my brain up to a bunch of machines, then lie down for a couple nights as sleeplessly as I could. It was the wrong thing to do, I know that now. But I've done a lot of wrong things in my life, a lot wronger than this one. And besides, $400 is $400. Now, the key to being a successful test subject is in the details. So I went online and did my homework, studied up on the symptoms, got the lingo down. I found some real doozies, polysomnogram being my favorite. I'd be sure to work that one in somewhere. The secretary was a permed and dyed woman with crooked but kindly eyes. She spoke to me in a hypnotic near whisper, as though trying to put me to sleep right there in the waiting room. It's the way we talk to someone terminal, afraid our words alone may be enough to do them in. Then she handed me a clipboard and, guilt-ridden, asked that I please fill it out. Q, do you have difficulty falling or staying asleep? A, yes and or yes. Q, do you awaken from sleep not feeling rested? A, frequently I wonder if I've woken up at all. Q, how often do you awaken at night? A, anywhere from 2 to 87 times. Q, do you drink much coffee? What happened? Somebody was disappointed in that response? I'm sorry. I'll edit that one. Q, do you drink much coffee? A, only when awake. Q, do you have any excessive stress or anxiety? A, I wouldn't say it's excessive, but after my dad saw the inside of my medicine cabinet, he bought 1,000 shares of Merck. Ba-dum-bum. Q, what do you do during the few hours before you go to bed? A, brood, fret, torment myself generally. Q, are you often falling asleep? A, sometimes even in my dreams. Q, do you fall asleep at inappropriate times or places? A, once at my grandfather's funeral. But in my defense, it was a very dry ceremony. Q, do you have breath-holding spells? A, does that include underwater? Q, do you have any aches or pains that prevent you from sleeping? A, only if you count deep psychological scars from early childhood. Q, do you snore? A, I wouldn't know, I'm asleep at the time. Thank you very much, and don't forget to tip your waitress. This was not going to be a problem, I assured myself. So maybe I didn't have chronic insomnia by definition. So maybe I wasn't what you might call a classic textbook example. So maybe, truth be told, sleeping is one of the few things I pride myself on and manage to do consistently well. So what? Is that any reason why I shouldn't take part in an insomnia study? Especially in an age when the entire healthcare system needs an overhaul? When our own FDA is in cahoots with the drug companies, where deadly side effects are kept hidden from the hapless public, why, I'll be checking up on them, making sure their methods are sound. I'm a watchdog for the common man, behaving in accordance with the tenor of the times. There were any number of things I could keep myself awake over. I've done it 1,000 times. My list is extensive. In the not enough of category, we have cash, short-term memory, time, and sexual potency. In the too much of category, you'll find girth, pot smoking, and surfing the net for free porn. But the one worry that currently stands head and shoulders above the rest, the one that's been keeping me up for the last couple weeks, is my father, who is at this moment lying in Sinai with a catheter in his crotch, waiting patiently for a quadruple bypass. By the time they got me all wired up, I was already jonesing for a nap. Thankfully, my room had a television, and they told me to watch as much as I wanted. I made up my mind to find the most insipid reality programming offered and embrace it like a Chekhov play until my own reality was but a faded, empty dream. But I also came prepared. I had hatched a backup plan in the event I found myself drifting off at 3 a.m. No matter what degree of examination they were planning to give me, I felt pretty confident it wasn't going to involve my nuts. So I crushed a bunch of no-dos into a doll-sized Ziploc and taped it to the underside of my balls. If I got tired, I would simply dip a moistened finger in the powder. and inconspicuously lick it clean. Despite the state-of-the-art equipment that surrounded me, monitoring my every electrical impulse, polysomnograms and all, by 8 p.m., the batteries in my remote control were failing. I took it as a bad omen, potentially indicating a downturn in my father's condition. I was unable to change channels and got stuck with Dateline NBC. No big deal, could be worse. I could have 4 blocked arteries and a cardiac pump keeping me alive. Stone Phillips was interviewing this fat, balding, older white guy, and he's talking about getting sliced up and the pain from the clamps and whatnot, and I'm thinking maybe he was attacked by a gang or something, until I finally figure out that what happened was that this guy had actually, no bullshit, woken up in the middle of heart surgery. Apparently, Western anesthetics have little to no effect on him. I don't remember the exact title of the segment, but it may as well have been the most horrific 8 hours of anybody's life who ever existed on the planet, bar none, except for perhaps maybe, but only maybe now, Jesus. I'm paraphrasing, but the dialogue went something like this. Anesthetic-resistant man. When I woke up, they had my thorax wide open. I could feel the wind in my chest cavity. Stone Phillips. That's disgusting. Anesthetic resistant man. I could feel them cutting into me, sawing through my breastbone. I started flashing back. For a while there, I thought I was in Nam. They kept me locked in solitary for months and tortured me almost on a daily basis. But this surgery thing, man, this was worse. Stone, you wanted desperately to speak out. Anesthetic resistant, but soon to be filthy rich off his out-of-court settlement, man. I couldn't say or do anything. See, part of what the anesthesia does is it totally paralyzes you. Lucky me, huh? I got the paralysis without the pain killing. They got me in therapy now. I shut off the TV. I couldn't for a second allow myself to entertain the thought of Dad going through something like that. But it was too late. The idea was already bouncing around in my head, and it wouldn't leave. It felt like a sign. There were disturbing similarities. My father was also an overweight, balding white man who had served in the war. Long ago, he'd made a promise to himself never to undergo any sort of heart surgery. Because shortly after his own mother went in for her bypass, she became demented. Believed Nazis were landing helicopters atop Hebrew rehab, and shortly thereafter died. To this day, he blames the doctors. I plunged my finger in my groin and licked off the bitterness. Ten minutes later, I had the jitters. My concern for my father existed in my mind on a multitude of disturbing levels. Not only was I, of course, worried for his well-being, I also couldn't help thinking that between us there remained a lot of work to be done. That here I was, lying in a similar bed, just a few miles away, for no good reason at all, except to milk the system for a few $100, when, the last time I saw my father, the best final words he could muster were, "Well, it was nice knowing you all." Not exactly the sort of emotionally groundbreaking stuff one would hope for from a man who believed his life might be about to end. There had been no father-son coming to terms, just as it had been with his own father before him. And now, if, God forbid, the unspeakable happened while I was in here jerking around the medical community, then that would be it. No, staying awake these few nights would not be a problem. I held a Zoloft pen between my now shaky fingers, turned over my sleep study instructions, and spent much of the night drafting the words I would say to my dad when I walked out of Mass General and caught the T to Sinai. I won't print them here, but the general message of the thing was that I loved him, and that, considering he had lived most of his life without his father in it, I thought he had generally done a pretty decent job, and I was proud and thankful to have known him. When I finally finished writing, the sky was just beginning to reveal the earliest iridescence of morning. I peeled the countless sticky pads from my heart, and the EKG drew a long, unwavering line. Freed from the adhesion, I felt somehow renewed, as if waking from a sound and restful sleep. Thank you very much.